the top players and legends to the very best analysts around the world from wherever the beautiful game is played. This is BTP. Now, we're talking football.
Yes, hello folks, welcome to the weekly Beyond the Pitch show. Of course, I'm your host Phil Byrne, as always, joined with my three co-pilots, Danny Higginbotham, and my regular co-host Martin. We'll work so much to get through here, as transfer window is just closed, or closing, pretty much. No major moves, it looks like, are going to take place by the time you listen to this recording. First of all, boys, how's things?
Yeah, very well, on this end.
Very good, thanks, mate. Not too bad at all.
Yeah, we'll largely cover ins and outs, transfer window, and what that's going to mean for the remainder of the Premier League today, of course. It's more been about what didn't happen, that could have happened. But the first thing we'll start with, because what really started all of this, about what all these major moves, I suppose, was the complete surrender of Arsenal away to Liverpool. Danny, I'm going to start with you first on this, mate, since you've been in a dressing room and at a Premier League level. And there's a lot of things from a fan's perspective that you can forgive. You can forgive a lack of talent. You can forgive poor tactics. You can forgive poor form. You can forgive players wanting away, but you can't forgive a lack of effort, because it's one thing that a fan can relate to. I might not be as good as you. I might not have the talent as you, but I would run my Arsenal for this football club. Mm-hmm. And what I saw Arsenal against Liverpool, I saw players completely disconnected from Arsenal Football Club. Even when Arsenal lost 8-2 to United, there was fight in that Arsenal team. But what I saw the other day was an absolute disgrace to a professional football team, an absolute disgrace, and completely inexcusable for Arsene Wenger, who's been there as long as he has, for a team to look that poor this early in the season. What the hell did we watch?
I think, and it goes back to something I've said it a few times with Arsene Wenger. I think first and foremost we have to say that he's been a phenomenal manager for Arsenal. He changed the way of football in this country, but I just think now that he's got to the age where he wants a group of players that are just going to get on with it, aren't going to question, aren't going to fall out of line, aren't going to argue, fight in the dressing room. And that's why I think like the likes of Sanchez, you know, people are saying, you know, he wants to leave the football club and things like that. I bet he is one of the players that, if one of the only players that questions things in the dressing room. Now, if you look at the great Arsenal teams, you look at the great Manchester United teams, the great Chelsea teams, there will be players in them dressing rooms that after a performance that was mediocre for them, they would be questioning every single one of their teammates, asking them, why are you doing this? Why didn't you do this better? To the point where certain individuals, I would imagine, would probably have each other up by the scruff of the neck. Imagine Vieira in the Arsenal dressing room, the likes of Petit. Then you look at Roy Keane, you look at Nicky Butt, you look at Chelsea, you look at John Terry. You look at players like that over the years. Liverpool, you look at Gerrard, you look at Carragher. I don't see any of them type of characters at Liverpool. At Arsenal. Because for me, I think Arsene Wenger wants a dressing room now that's easy to manage. Now, if you've got a successful dressing room, and I mean, I'm not about a team that is newly promoted into the Premier League and finishes 9th, 10th or 11th. I'm on about consistent winners. Winning the Premier League consistently. Them teams, they're always asking questions of each other, always questioning each other's performances, because they're all going in the same direction, but they all want to get better from each other. And sometimes the manager in them situations is like, oh, I've got to deal with this individual, I've got to deal with that individual, because there'll be a lot of fallings out, there'll be fights and everything. And that's part and parcel of it. When you have winners in a team together, they're always going to question their teammates. Now, I don't think Arsene Wenger wants that anymore. I don't think he wants players in the dressing room anymore that are like that. I don't think he wants to sign players that are like that in the dressing room anymore. So when people say that Arsenal have got a poor squad, they've got a bad team, for me, they haven't got a poor squad. They haven't got a poor team. Their biggest problem is they are much of a muchness. They're all one type of player. So if you had 11 players that are scrappers, you're not going to win the Premier League. If you've got 11 players that want to get on the ball, happy going forward, you know, won't question each other, won't call each other out when things aren't going right, you will not win the Premier League. What you need is a mix. And the teams that win the Premier League, you have your guts and your guile in a good, even amount. You know what? The top teams are players that can do both. Now, they're the top teams. And that, for me, is the issue that I think Arsenal have. Not the fact that they haven't got good players. They're blessed with some fantastic players. But they're blessed with a group of players that are very similar in style and probably character as well. Now, I don't think there's a Gerrard-type player in that dressing room, a Keane-type player in that dressing room, a John Terry-type player, a Jamie Carragher-type player, a Gary Neville-type player. I don't think there's any of them in that dressing room. And you go back to the great Arsenal teams, your Vieiras, your Petits, your Campbells, your Adams, your Keowns, your Parlors. They would ask questions of each other in the dressing room. But I don't think Arsene Wenger wants that anymore. I really don't. That's my own honest opinion, because he seems to only sign a particular type of player, and that is a player that's pretty on the eye. When it all gels, they're one of the best footballing teams in the Premier League. But don't necessarily ask enough of each other. And that's okay if you want to be Premier League also-rans, if you want to finish in the, you know, 11 downwards when you're trying to stay in the Premier League. But when you're trying to win things, you need players that are continuously going to ask questions of each other and try and better themselves and make their teammates better. And I just don't see that at Arsenal, which is a real shame.
Martin, did Arsenal battle the decision? And if you had anything to add to that, what Danny just said, did Arsenal battle the decision over the summer?
Well, you know, I look back at Arsenal, right? And I look at one key factor that's sometimes left out of this, and that's David Dean. Now, David Dean left 2007, was it, when Kroenke and that took over? And Arsene Wenger and David Dean had a very, very good relationship, very good partnership. They kind of fed off each other. There was a trust level there. You saw the transfer dealings were never in question back in that time. Ever since then, you're talking 10 years now and 3 FA Cups, I believe, in that time. So a lot has coincided with the change in regime. Maybe it's become, like you say, the change in stadium, the new business model where it is a business and less of a football club in these days. So I look at that as a major factor in all this. Then I look at the game against Liverpool the other day, and I look at the likes of Oxlade-Chamberlain playing against the team he has now just joined. Don't tell me that's just happened overnight. So what on earth was Oxlade-Chamberlain being selected for that game for? There's no way he can give 100% for his current club when the club he's about to join is on the other side of the pitch. And you have a player in Alexis Sanchez who doesn't want to be at the football club. And then we talk about downing tools. Well, it's no surprise. You look at some of the tracking. I say tracking back. It was non-existent tracking back. The second Liverpool broke the line, that was it. I mean, defenders, goalkeepers left out to dry. And not very good ones at that. It was as bad a Premier League performance from a so-called top club that I ever recall in Premier League history. But I think this has been coming for some time now. And whilst Danny and I both, you know, were under the same opinion that he would get that, you know, that would get that contract extension, by no means did I think it was the right thing to do. On top of that, though, I mean, number one, who do you bring in? And a lot of complaints, a lot of criticism from the Arsenal fans have been about the backing of the board to sign players. Well, any new manager who's going to come in there is going to demand 200 million. Oh, that was probably 2 years ago. They'd probably want 300 or 400 million at this point with the current transfer fees.
Yep.
So, you know, any manager coming in is going to need that. So are the board even going to back a new manager with that kind of funds to come in there? And now they've put themselves in a position where most of these players want out. So, you know, you know Champions League football, a manager who's all over the place, a board that thinks about business first, not football first, players who want out, who's going to want to go there?
This is the problem. Go ahead, Danny.
One of the biggest problems you're going to have, right, and I'm going to bring Liverpool into this because, you know, as things stand, we know that the transfer window does shut a day later in Spain. So things could change, okay? So at the moment, if you are Arsenal have to be very careful because they're going to be fishing in another pool very soon for players. They're not going to be at the top table because, listen, I wasn't an elite player. I wasn't a top player that was going to go and play for one of the top clubs in the Premier League. But you know from speaking to people and spending time with footballers that footballers want to progress. They want to see success. They want to go to football clubs for success. So if you are a player, and like I say, you know, I might be speaking ahead of time because something could happen with Coutinho. But if it doesn't, this is just an example that I'm going to give, is that if you are wanted by Arsenal, and if you're wanted by Liverpool. So you're wanted by Arsenal. Well, hang on a second. You've got Sanchez that's coming into the last year of his contract. He's not signing a new contract. You've got Ozil that's going into the last year of his contract. Doesn't look like he's going to be signing a new contract. You've got Oxlade-Chamberlain, who's just left the football club. Now, no matter what you say, no matter what people think about him, he has, it's weakened Arsenal's squad and made a competitor, a domestic competitor's squad stronger. They have a history of selling some of their best players to other Premier League clubs, and then they then go on and win the Premier League. So you're going to question yourself whether you're going to go there. Now, we go over to Liverpool, and like I say, it, you know, something could happen. But at the moment, Liverpool have had offers for Coutinho in excess of what? £95, £100 million? And so far, they are turning that away. They've got Keita that's going to be coming in the summer. They've signed Salah. Obviously, there's been talk about Lamar. Doesn't know whether it's going to happen or not. Probably not going to happen. But if you're a player and Klopp wants to sign you, he's going to come up to you and go, listen, Coutinho, he's one of our men at the football club. Do you see what happened in the summer? We turned down £92 million, £100 million, whatever it was, because we want to build a football club here. We want you to come and be part of this. So you see the club growing. And the only problem is when you look at Arsenal, like I say, it might not happen for, it might happen with Liverpool. Coutinho could go, but this is just saying if he doesn't. But from Arsenal's point of view, they're going backwards. Now, they finished outside the top four last season. There is an argument to say that they are weaker this season than last season. There's a huge argument to say that they're going to be weaker next season when the likes of Sanchez go on a free, because I don't see him sign a new contract. The same with Ozil, because I'd be surprised if he signs a new contract. So when them two players then go, if and when they do go, the caliber of type of player that you're going to be able to sign, you're not going to be able to match Manchester United. You're not going to be able to match Manchester City, Chelsea. You're not going to be able to match Liverpool. And you're not going to be able to match, I'm trying to think who's Tottenham.
Everton at this point.
Yeah, Everton as well. Everton can challenge Arsenal to break into that top six. So all of a sudden, Arsenal from 6, 7, 8 years ago, being one of the top 3 or 4 clubs in the Premier League in terms of if anybody wants to sign a player in the Premier League, Arsenal got a great chance of signing them. All of a sudden, they become like, what, 5th, 6th in the pecking order? And that's the way it's going at the moment for Arsenal.
Look, here's the thing. Arsenal from the very top to the bottom are a football club that sets its manager business goals, not football goals. They buy players to finish 4th. That's all. From the very top to the bottom of that football club, the goals that are set are finish 4th, nothing else matters. That's a business objective. That's not a football objective. It's great that you finish 4th. If you use that as a springboard to buy players like United are doing, to win the league, to then compete in the Champions League, but that never has been Arsenal's remit. They have paid the Emirates Stadium off. It was paid off in 2013. Arsene Wenger said back then, now that the stadium's paid off, we're going to spend big. They never have. He's a guy that always looks completely uncomfortable with spending money. Peter Cech was signed the year that Leicester won the league. If Arsenal had a strengthened property, that's when they'd have won the league. After United beat them 8-2, they went out and sent Andre Santos, Per Mertesacker, Arteta and Park Chu-Yung. One of those worked out, Arteta. The rest, maybe Mertesacker to stretch. Mertesacker's not a great defender to me. Always reacting, panic buying. For a guy that's been there for so long, who should know exactly the strengths and weaknesses, I understand if you've just been hired, and you're trying to evaluate your squad and you buy late in the window. There's no excuse for Arsene Wenger to be sitting here on the last day of the window, losing his best players. Oxlade-Chamberlain wants out. He's got a situation now with Alexis Sanchez where he's going to lose their best player for free next summer and have to put up with a guy that is so despondent, so miserable, doesn't want to be there. It's a ridiculous situation. What's the point of moving into these stadiums if it's going to represent zero change financially for Arsenal? What's the point of even being at Arsenal? Arsene Wenger can go, but you can bring in anybody you want, but if the culture's still the same, just finish 4th, nothing's going to change.
One of the biggest problems that they do have is, like, I look at Manchester United have done it, Tottenham have done it, Liverpool have done it, and Manchester City probably would have to do it, and Chelsea likewise would have to do it. they have all sold their top players to other clubs. But the difference is, them clubs have been Real Madrid or Barcelona. Now, I don't care who you are. I look at Manchester United, for me, the biggest football club in the world. A, I'm a Manchester lad. B, I'm from England. And C, it was the team that I grew up supporting. But if you look at these players, so the likes of Ronaldo, it will have been his dream to play for Real Madrid. Suarez, his dream probably to play for Barcelona. And Coutinho, it probably is his dream, without question, to play for Barcelona, but it's not happening at the minute. Now, I don't begrudge anything like that. So all of a sudden, if Sanchez would have gone today for £50 million to Barcelona or to Real Madrid, whatever it may be, you take a step back and go, you know what, that's understandable. But the simple fact is that if a club in England had have come up with the right amount of money and Arsenal were able to get a replacement, Sanchez would be playing in the Premier League for another club at the end of this transfer window. Now, could you ever imagine Manchester United selling Paul Pogba to Chelsea, to Arsenal, to Liverpool? Could you ever imagine Liverpool, now the way that they are, selling one of their top players to one of their contenders? Chelsea, there's question marks over Matic, but a lot of people will say because he had the friendship with Abramovich, like Chet, when he went to Arsenal. But other than that, it's not the fact that Arsenal are selling players, but it's the fact that Arsenal are selling players to their domestic rivals, making their domestic rivals stronger whilst making themselves weaker. It makes no sense. If you sell to Barcelona or Real Madrid, you know what? I don't consider you a selling club because that's the pinnacle of a lot of players' careers. So you accept that and you have to step back from that and understand that. But to sell to your domestic rivals is not acceptable.
Yeah, and another frustrating thing, if I'm an Arsenal fan looking from afar here, and these token bids they keep putting in, you know, they put a bid in for Kylian Mbappe. Now, is that a serious bid, or is that a bid to appease the fans to try and make it look like they're in for these players? The £92 million bid for Lamar today. Lamar since...
Add Suarez to that as well.
That he wants to, with the £1.
That's disgraceful, I'm sorry.
But it's like a token effort to appease people when they don't genuinely believe they're going to get these players. So, hey, we'll make it look like we're making an effort. And I relate it to, you know, we all see it, those players who, you know, they go up for a head and they give the token jump. You know, hey, I'm going to make it look like, you know, to the boss, like I'm really going for this ball. But, you know, we know players who are really going for it and people who are putting in a token effort. And I think that's what Arsenal have become. They're trying to appease people throwing this. They have no intention of signing. There's no way they're going to spend 90 million. They want to spend 90 million, you know, are willing to spend that kind of. Why don't they just let Sanchez walk for 50 million, 60 million? They could have got the money they wanted if they wanted to. And now he's going to walk for nothing. So for somebody who was now basing it on a business model, it's poor business as well as poor football.
It is. And that is spot on, because what you're going to hear now is like people saying, well, okay, They've not sold into Manchester City. They've not sold into to wherever it may be in the Premier League that might want him. But now we could well join him for free next summer. But the problem was years ago. When I was playing football as a player, you were either delighted to go into your last year because it was like, okay, well, you know what, I hold all the cards now. I'll do whatever I want. You want to give me a new contract? Well, you know what? it's going to have to be a massive amount, because realistically, if I go and join another club, and I'm talking about the top players, if the top players go to another club, they'll say, well, I'll tell you what, I want X amount of million signing on fees, you don't have to pay for me, and I want this weekly wage, and they'll get it.
Yep.
Arsenal should be at a point where you have your top players. The only players at any football club, and this doesn't matter whether you're right at the top of the Premier League or the bottom of League Two, you don't let any of your players go into the last year of their contract unless they have no value to you, unless you want to get rid of them and you're prepared to say, right, okay, you know what, let's write this last year off. You go and get what you want. We won't ask for a free for you, and away you go. But to let your top players go into their last year where they then hold all the cards, and let's not forget, they can sort a deal out in January to go abroad in 5 months' time. So if you're Alexis Sanchez now, I don't think, this is my honest opinion, Alexis Sanchez, if he decides that he's just going to kick his feet up now at Arsenal for the rest of this season, I'm not saying he's going to, but if he was to, it isn't going to be detrimental to the move that he's going to get, because these big clubs that wanted him now will still want him next year on a free. So he can just sit down, take his money from us. Not saying he's going to do that, but Arsenal have backed themselves into a corner yet again with an individual player.
I think they get turned down by Thomas Lamar. I think Thomas Lamar told him, which is almost worse, I want Champions League football. You're not.
He said he wanted to go to Liverpool, didn't
he? Well, that's what we're hearing. We're hearing, that he said that that's exactly what he wanted. He wants champion. He doesn't want to go off from the Champions League to Europa.
This is the consequences of not finishing top four. Arsenal are always lauded as some sort of sensible business. There's no sensible business in putting yourself in a situation where your back is against the wall and you're allowing players to get down to 18 months on their contract before you even start talking. Once you get down to the 18-month mark, you're losing control of the negotiation. Then the advantage swings to the player, especially if it's a top player in his prime, and Arsenal don't have many Alexis Sanchez's. So the question you ask yourself now as an Arsenal player, why would you stay if you're a top player? And so here's the questions that need answering for me. Will the problem be fixed with just getting rid of Arsene Wenger? I think not, is my answer to that question. As things stand right now with the culture at Arsenal Football Club, from the board right down, can Arsenal compete again with United, a City, a Chelsea, with that current culture? Again, I think not. You're asking somebody to perform miracles. And you see how difficult it is for Pochettino even to do it. And I'm sure Arsenal are looking at Pochettino and saying, if he can do it, why can't Wenger? Because they'd be happy with finishing second. They'd be happy finishing third. So to me, those are the questions. What is the solution? And finally, we've put the boot into Wenger. We've put the boot into the board. But do the players bear responsibility as well for what we saw at the weekend?
Of course they do as individuals. But before get onto that, that's fine. But there's a question I want to ask you two, because you both mentioned it, and I agree. Arsenal's being run like a business. Football, unfortunately, now is a business. Right. Now, Arsenal are into uncharted territories this season, because we say Arsenal, if it's run like a business, what is their business plan this season? Forget the transfer windows. Forget bringing players in. Is their business, and this is going to be really interesting as far as I'm concerned, because we've seen how much of a nightmare it can be for teams. What's their business plan this season? Is it to try and win the Europa League or try and get in the top four? Because you ain't going to do both. So which one is it this year? United, we saw what happened with Manchester United last season. They got to a point, it's like, we ain't going to finish fourth. So we've got to go for the Europa League. So what do Arsenal do? Do Arsenal throw all their eggs in one basket to win the Europa League, which gives them Champions League football without a playoff? Or do they say, well, you know what? Playing Thursday nights is going to really mess our Sunday games up, because that's what the Europa League does. So I don't know what you two think, but I'm really interested to see which direction goes in that way. And what do you two think about that?
Well, I tell you right now, you mentioned there about selling players to your Premier League rivals. And at this point, I don't think Arsenal have sold a player to a Premier League rival, because I no longer think those top four, top five clubs are Premier League rivals for Arsenal.
It's
a good argument. Somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but seriously now, at this point, you look at the investment from Everton, you look how well they've started here, that they've showed desire and they've showed commitment to improve. Tottenham are finally getting a bit of business done at a great 11, 12 players anyway. And the rest of them at the top. Obviously, Chelsea are struggling bringing players in this window. But at this point, are they doing that? Are they saying, okay, that's not our direct rival anymore? And it may well be Europa or bust for these guys.
Here's the thing. I can understand why Chelsea and United are struggling to bring in four or five players, because there's really only a select small bunch of players that are going to come in and improve those teams. So where they're shopping is a much smaller selection of players. Arsenal, there's a lot of players out there that come in and improve them. There's no way Arsenal are getting the consistency out of that squad to finish in the top four. It's too competitive now. There's no way. So when you've got your best players desperate to get out, and when you've got them going to places like Liverpool completely surrendering, how on earth does Wenger convince these players that they need to give them the fight and the consistency that they're going to need to get in the top four? Not going to happen. I think you're going to see Arsenal continue to decline. And they've never convinced me that in Europe that they have any type of nous in Europe to know how to win games. Bayern Munich absolutely demolished them 2 years in a row. Absolutely demolished them. And every time they come up against a good team, which you inevitably do once you get into the latter stages of the Europa League, I think an above-average Spanish team beats Arsenal. I think an above-average German team is in with a great shot against Arsenal. An Italian team, Arsenal were to play Napoli or something like that, Napoli go out of the Champions League, Napoli beats them. I don't see any... There's no ingredients in that team that is going to produce a winning team. United, you could see it. You could see that with Mkhitaryan, with Pogba, Ibrahimovic, it was coming together. There was, yes, there were a couple of players short, but they were all playing for their manager. Liverpool, Klopp, all playing for their manager. That's not an Arsenal team playing for their manager. So for me, that they don't win anything this year.
Well, and the other major factor is now you've got your one match winner who doesn't want to be there.
Yeah.
So what's his reaction going to be now? I mean, is he going to knuckle down now and really, really graft? I'd question that.
All right, what's the solution, boys? What do Arsenal need to do to fix this problem?
It's a board. It's changed from the top all the way down.
It is. It's completely that, because, like you say, people are talking about a new manager coming in, but rightly so, if a new manager comes in, he wants to get... He wants, like Martin said, probably £200, £250 million. But the problem is that the board are probably very content and very happy with the manager they've got. But that's why I think this season is a real game changer for them, because they're probably not going to finish top four and they're probably not going to win the Europa League. So therefore, what they're going to do? They might have a season next year without any Europe whatsoever whilst losing their two or three best players. Big problem.
Well, their big money buy didn't even start a match against Liverpool.
I can't understand that. How on earth can you... Martin, you hit the nail on the head. You're sitting there, you're going, Oxlade-Chamberlain turned down Chelsea to go to Liverpool. Clearly that was not an overnight thing. How did Kolasinac and Lacazette not start the game at the weekend? For players that wanted to go. It's unbelievable to me. And now you have a situation where if Lacazette is a shining light for them this season, he turned around and said before he joined Arsenal that he wanted Champions League football. And that was determining whether he was going to move or not. And he ended up making an exception. He's not going to sit around too long, because eventually he's going to ask the same question that Alexis Sanchez asked, that Robin Van Persie asked, because the top players are going to get paid no matter what, wherever they go. Eventually it comes down to trophies. Can this team compete? And unless you're brought up in North London, then the likelihood you're going to hold on to these players, not high.
I tell you, I had them, on our first show there. I think I tipped, and we all did. I think we all tipped them to be in the top four, didn't we? And I tell you, I know I did, and
me?
Right now...
Arsenal? Nope, not me. I didn't pick them.
I did. I had them in fourth, I know that. And I tell you right now, looking at them right now, they'll be looking at finishing the top six.
I couldn't see. I could only see further decline. I was amazed that they gave Wenger another 2 years. Amazed. So obvious to me that this is a guy who hasn't evolved in the modern era, and you've got a cultural problem at Arsenal that Arsene Wenger clearly is not a guy that likes to spend a lot of money, so the culture suits him. It probably suits
you just hit the nail on the head there. It probably suits the people that make the decisions as well.
Yes, exactly. They want a Simeone coming in there and saying, I'm not happy with fourth. Mm-hmm. We need to tear everything up. You need to back me in the market, and if you don't, I'm going to be sitting in the press conference throwing all of you under the bus.
Yeah.
Arsene Wenger won't do that. So the question with Arsenal fans, how much of this can you take? Because when you're paying £100, sometimes it's £100 into the Emirates. That's unbelievable. So they're paying the most per capita for ticket prices in the Premier League, and getting that back, I'm sorry, that is completely unacceptable.
I think the frustration is as well, if you look at Arsenal, if we'd have sat down here 5 years ago and the three of us and said, right, okay, what do Arsenal need? We'd be saying the same thing today.
Exactly right.
And everyone can see it. I don't support Arsenal. The Arsenal supporters can see it. Everyone who follows football can see it. The manager must surely be able to see, but it's not addressed year after year.
Well, Danny, we've been doing this show over a year, and we've gone through three transfer windows where we have categorically discussed the spine of that team.
Yeah, yeah.
Listen,
three transfer windows now.
What did Mourinho say? He said, I gave Ed Woodward my list back in March, April. He knew exactly what he needed to improve this United team. He had 9 months to make a decision. Arsene Wenger's the longest serving manager in the Premier League. There's no excuse for him not knowing what Arsenal need and not going out and prioritising and getting it. Nemanja Matic at 35 million is not beyond Arsenal's price range. You know, so when you look, I thought they should have sent Schneiderlin. You know, Wenger tried to get him the year before United did and wasn't able to get it. And this is always the problem at Arsenal. Always end up in defeat in pursuit of players. They couldn't get Higuain when they needed him. Higuain would have changed the club.
What about a Ross Barkley? Yeah. A player that wants out. All right, question marks about his, you know, the ability and how good is he really? But that's a player that Arsenal could be attainable financially. He's in the last year of his contract. He would be able to get him. And there's no interest at all. So it's really bizarre. I don't know what they're looking for. I have no idea what type of player. Well, I think Danny said it, didn't he? He wants to say what type of player they've already got at the club.
Let me ask you both a question before we move on from Arsenal. Everyone, Danny, if you listen to Lee Dixon, you listen to players that played with Wenger, they'll all say, Thierry Henry, Wenger's a winner. This is going to hurt him big time. This will sting. But Arsene Wenger's been feeling at the same obvious problems every year. These are not subtle problems that you would only understand if you're in the club. How do you think Arsene Wenger's feeling? Do you think he's looking at this and saying, look, as long as I get this club in fourth, we're fine, or we're overreacting? Or do you think he's sitting down and questioning himself and going, am I the problem? And if I am, should I go?
I think he'll be questioning himself, but I think if he truly thought it was a problem, then he wouldn't have signed a new contract.
Yeah.
I think with Arsene Wenger, and you look at a lot of the top managers in European football now. All right, there'll be a few where you can say, well, no, he's a little bit older. Football is now becoming younger in management senses. So you look at some of the top managers in world football: Zidane, Guardiola, Mourinho, Conte. Now what he did at Chelsea, Simeone. I'm just trying to think. Some of there will be exceptions to the rule, Ancelotti. He'll be an exception to the rule, but few and far between now. And what you're seeing more often than ever now, I believe, is that younger managers, because football is evolving all the time. When Arsene Wenger first came to Arsenal, I believe that he changed the way that football was seen in this country there. The professionalism of players, the different ways, the different styles that he brought to this country, and that was all well and good. But I honestly believe that not just in football, but any business, doesn't matter whether you're playing football, whether you are an electrician, whether you're a plumber, whether you're a mechanic, anything, the older you get, the more set in your ways you become, the less open you are to change.
Yep.
We have seen in the last 2 years, certain managers, Conte, first comes to Chelsea playing four at the back, now playing three at the back, successful. Guardiola, flipping heck, he plays all different systems, plays a four, plays a three. We've seen Mourinho play four at the back, we've seen him play three at the back, we've seen him play a 4-3-3, a 4-2-3-1. Tottenham, we've seen Tottenham play a three at the back, we've seen Tottenham play a four at the back with all different types of players. Arsene Wenger, he was always methodically a 4-2-3-1 for quite a considerable amount of time. Changed to a three at the back towards the end of last season, but that for me was through force, not because of forward thinking. And if you look at the likes of Manchester City and Chelsea, and even Tottenham to a certain extent, the reason that they went to a back three was probably because they wanted to score more goals. Arsenal went to a back three to make themselves more defensively solid. So that was the reason that was done. And I just feel that Arsene Wenger has been a magnificent manager, and I think it's important because he's getting battered from pillar to post at the minute because people believe he's outstayed his welcome and, you know, his time's up now. So I think it's only right that we do say what a magnificent manager he's been, but I just think that the older you get, the more set you become on your way. So yes, he has changed his system. So people might say, well, what are you on about? He's changed his system. He's not changed his style at all. He doesn't change his style. Question for you two, and this will hopefully prove that Arsene Wenger doesn't change his style. Do you remember a game that Arsenal played, I think it was a couple of seasons ago, and it stands out to me like a sore thumb because it was the only, forget the tactical side, the way that he set up, he completely changed his style for one game, and it stands out to me massively.
Was it the one in the Champions League where...
It was in the Premier League.
Okay.
It was in the Premier League.
I saw them do it...
about 2 or 3 years ago.
I saw them do it in the Champions League where I think they... I can't remember who it was against. They won the game by turning it ugly against a team they shouldn't have beaten. And I was like, that's the first time I've seen Arsenal make a game ugly and win it ugly. It might have been the, the first leg against, I can't remember who it was against. I have to look at it.
It's a Premier League game. Do you remember anything, Martin?
No, I'm racking my, and I think that says it all. The fact that you right. can't remember a time.
there's one, and it stands out so strong to me because it's the only time I've ever seen it. And I thought, wow, the penny's dropped. It was Manchester City away about 2.5-3 years ago, and Manchester City were the mm-hmm. overwhelming favourites.
Yes, I remember.
Arsenal scored, I think it was 2-0 or 2-1 or even 1-0. They scored against the run of play. They sat back, they soaked up all the pressure and caught Manchester City on the counter-attack. And I remember after the game, everyone was going, wow, he has changed his tactics. This is going to be amazing now. This is means Arsenal are going to kick on again. Lo and behold, it didn't. He went back to what he'd known before. But it's amazing because that one game stands out to me and will forever stand out to me because it's the only time I see him play differently.
And it's one major, major criticism of Wenger that you hear from ex-players. He doesn't prepare for the opposition. He plays his style, his way.
Yeah.
And we saw it. I mean, you saw it to horrific effect this weekend against Liverpool. There was no tactical awareness of how Liverpool played. There was no attempt to counter what Liverpool were going to do. You don't have to be, you know, a UEFA license to know exactly how Liverpool played against them. And there was no tactical awareness on how to even counter that.
I remember Chelsea going to Manchester City. I think it was a Monday night under Mourinho. I can't remember whether it was the year they won the league or his first year back when they come very close to it. Everybody was going on about David Silva was in incredible form, playing on the left-hand side but tucking in. And all the talk was about how are Chelsea going to stop him? And the one thing that I've realised from, like, especially over the last 3 or 4 years, reading a lot more books, studying managers, watching their games, the tactical side of things, is that the best managers in the world turn opposition strengths into their weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
So what Mourinho did, Petr Cech was in there. Every time Petr Cech got the ball, Ivanovic, who was playing right wing, who was playing right back, so he would go and stand on the right wing, knowing that the ball could be played to over that area. There was only going to be one winner in a physical battle with David Silva. The whole of the width in that game came down the right-hand side. Ivanovic just stayed forward. Ivanovic scored the winner. David Silva did not know what to do because he didn't track Ivanovic back. So what Mourinho had done, he'd looked at Manchester City's team and gone, I'll tell you what, they've got a great team here, but how can I turn one of their strengths into the weaknesses? And that's what the best managers in the world do. Guardiola does it. Guardiola did it at Bayern Munich. He did it at Barcelona. Mourinho does it. Conte does it. Klopp, to a certain extent, does it as well. And the best managers in the world, Zidane does it. They do it. They look at, they show respect to the opposition, and they look at their strengths and say, right, that's their strength. That's how they win all our games. But how can we make that strength a weakness? Can we exploit an area behind that individual? Can we push high because we know this player wants to get in behind? That's what the top managers do now. But like you say, Arsene Wenger, he concentrates solely on his team. And everybody would have said before the game, if Liverpool are going to win this game, they're going to sit back, they're going to have less possession, they're going to allow Arsenal to have the ball, and then they're going to get them on the counter-attack. Lo and behold, scored 2 or 3 goals that way.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I have to say, I think for Arsenal, this has the feeling of almost the end of the Bruce Rioch era, where you feel like this is this massive football club that's living off past success, where it needs complete overhaul and needs major change. And someone needs to come in and revitalise a football club, but they're going to have to do it with their hand tied behind their back. It used to be Arsenal was the place to go if you wanted to play football in London. If you wanted to play football in the north, you went to United. Now you've got Chelsea. Now you've got Tottenham. You've got other clubs down in London that offer you the option of going there and having success. So, massive, massive job. And yeah, I don't think it can be done under Arsene Wenger. Let's take a look at some of the other winners and losers, folks, because we've spent quite a bit of time talking about Arsenal. Obviously, the main topic. Jurgen Klopp be feeling right now with the window closed? He signed Oxlade-Chamberlain today, kept the hold of Coutinho. God knows where Coutinho's head's at. Whether he's going to knuckle down and give him a top season, or whether you're going to get a player that isn't going to deal with it too well about not getting his dream move, assuming it doesn't go through by tomorrow. I can't imagine Liverpool letting him go. They've signed Keita for next season. Martin, I thought to you first. How is Jurgen Klopp going to be feeling right now?
Well, I think Jurgen Klopp will tell you he's feeling great. I think he'll lead us to believe that, you know, he's got the business done that he wanted to get done. He's kept all the Coutinho. He's brought in Oxlade-Chamberlain. as I said before, you know, he's been in the league 6 years now, and I don't know if he's any good, and I don't know what his best position is, which, you know, says it all about the lad. I mean, I've got a lot of respect for him. The fact that he turned down, he left 60 grand on the table at Chelsea to go to Liverpool. So, you know, respect there. I don't know where he fits. I don't know where he's going to play him. But to me, you know, like you said, Coutinho, where's his head at? What kind of effort, what kind of work rate are you going to get from Coutinho? Is he going to do a Costa? Is he going to sulk? I don't know. But realistically speaking, they've not strengthened in any areas they need to strengthen. They need defenders. They need another holding midfielder. They need a goalkeeper. We know they're going to score goals, but they're so wide open at the back and so poor from set pieces that I don't really think that they've added much to them themselves whatsoever.
Yeah, I think defensively, yeah, that's the problem that they've got. You know, obviously they wanted to get Van Dijk. Obviously that doesn't seem to be happening. They have added going forward. They've added more pace. Liverpool want to play on the counter attack. If we were to, my own honest opinion with Coutinho, if this was a year ago, I'd say there's going to be a major issue. But because it's 2017 now and the World Cup's next year, I don't see an issue with Coutinho. I think it's important for him to be playing at the World Cup. And in order for him to be playing at the World Cup, because Brazil are blessed with some fantastic players, in order for him to be going to the World Cup, to be playing at the World Cup, then he needs to be playing. And I look at a lot of other clubs. Southampton probably being another point in case with Van Dijk. A year earlier, I think he'd be gone. Because the club would have been like, he's going to sulk, he's going to do this.
But yeah, but he's been training with the kids now. What do? Do they just turn around now and go, okay, back in the first team you come? How's that going to go down?
Well, I think what happens is the minute the transfer window shuts, the club holds all the cards again. Because he's still got quite a bit of time left on his contract. So the minute the window shuts, I would imagine that the club will say, right, okay, you can come and train with the first team now. You need to come and apologise to the football club. Simple as that. Now, listen, I don't know whether, because he's Dutch, isn't he? So I don't know the state of the things of how Holland are looking for qualification for the World Cup and things like that. But just say, you know, obviously they've got aspirations to get to the World Cup and what have you. He will have aspirations to get to the World Cup then as well. So therefore, he's another player. If he's not playing, he ain't going to be going anywhere. I seem to remember, was it a similar scenario with De Gea? When Real Madrid come in for a few years, when it was World Cup year, and
the World Cup is an important caveat, because that is a good point.
Oh, it was the Euros. It was one of the two.
Yeah, that is a really important point. That this is why I'm not in favour of the transfer window at all. I don't like it. I think you get all this rushed business and you get massively inflated. Thomas Lemar, he's just scored an unbelievable goal for France, by the way, and Koscielny looks like he's just done his cruciate. For 90 million. Why? Because it's the last day of the window. This is madness. And this
what
is.
What do you suggest?
Danny, I think footballers should be like every other human being on the planet, that you can leave a job whenever you want, as long as a buying and a selling club and yourself come to an agreement.
It's interesting. It's really interesting because I was doing a show last week, and there was two different points of view, and the lad who was on there with me, his point of view was saying that there shouldn't be a transfer window. It should be, like you said, the freedom of movement, go and do whatever you want to do and things like that. My argument to that was, though, now this goes for the top and the bottom. What happens if you get 2 weeks? There's two games left before the end of the season, right? And let's say there's a player who plays for one of the bottom three clubs, and he has started scoring a lot of goals, and he's the one that's going to give them a chance of getting out of that bottom three. What happens if the fifth from bottom or the fourth from bottom is the team that they could possibly catch? What if the manager goes up and says, right, I tell you what, we'll offer 10 million for you right now. And if you don't take the 10 million, then that's fair enough. And you know what? We'll still have you in the summer. But you know what? If you're going to come to us in the summer, if your goals get us relegated, then you're going to be on X amount of money. If you don't score the goals, you're still coming to us, and you know what? You'll get double the money.
Yeah.
That's where I think it becomes a huge problem. That's in regard to the top and the bottom of the league. I think you'd have a, I think it becomes a chess match then and cause a lot of problems.
But we operated on this system for 100 years before we brought in a transfer window, and it was fine. And yes,
has football ever been as, I don't want to say cynical, but has football ever been this business related, where the amount of stuff that goes on now that used to go on?
Think about this. How many managers get sacked right before the transfer window? You see it in January. Clubs are sitting there. Do I want to give this manager 20, 30 million in January to spend? No. He's gone. Mm-hmm. The whole purpose of the transfer window that's brought in was A, for coaches to develop players, right? And to stop so much spending. What it's done is it's inflated players, the price of players. It's getting clubs to stockpile players because they're afraid of, they then loan these clubs out. You now see Man City just went and bought Girona FC in La Liga so that they can ship their players out there with, in partnership with Pep Guardiola's brother. So the spin-offs of this, for me, are so negative. And yes, neither scenario is perfect, but for me, without a doubt, the scenario of footballers being able to move whenever they want is still the preferential system versus what we have right now, because we have a system right now that is absolute madness. Now you see PSG, if you have a loan with a mandatory option to buy 160 million, that's not a loan. So now you've got all these ridiculous situations going on. And
well, you've also,
Alexis Sanchez, here you have a situation where you're stuck with a guy.
Well, also, on the Mbappe one, you've also got now another French team helping out a French team circumvent the financial fair play.
And
so they're helping each other get around it. So
Monaco get around it anyway because they don't have to pay the same taxes as PSG. You know, PSG have got to pay 90% tax on players. So you almost, for 200 grand, you're paying someone 400 grand. Monaco don't have to. Anyway, for me, I think the consequences of the transfer window are so negative. We could be sitting here talking about Ferguson, Sir Alex Ferguson, in a totally different light if they had a transfer window back when he signed Cantona. He signed Cantona back in November when Dean Dublin broke his leg. And the United couldn't score goals. Maybe if he waits to January, David Hurst becomes available. David Hurst, we know, had horrific injuries throughout the rest of his career. Things could have turned out so differently. I just think, and then you had a situation where maybe if there's a transfer window, United load up on strikers, two or three that summer, because they're afraid of being in a situation where they can't buy. I just think this transfer window is so negative, and it's led to agents getting unbelievable amounts of money because they're able to capitalize on this window. They're able to bring in panic buying. You've pushed up the price of players to an unbelievable degree, and you've got big clubs now stockpiling players. And I just think it's not having the effect it should have had.
Well, it certainly put an end to the ridiculous release clauses too.
But do you not think there'd be even more stockpiling if you didn't have a transfer window? Because I think you would end up with clubs buying players just for the sake of it, because the team that they're buying the player off is 2 weeks away from staying off from relegation, or is 2 weeks away from winning the Premier League. So I'll tell you what, we'll go and try and buy their best player, and we'll give him all the money. He's probably not going to be any use to us next year, but he serves a purpose for this year because he keeps in the Premier League, and keeping us in the Premier League is worth 80, 90 million. So if we have to go and spend 30 million quid on a lad that's not even going to play, just going to be sat here, let's do that. Well, guarantees that they're going to go down.
Yeah, a lot of that's going to fall on the player himself, though, isn't it? I mean, you're counting on a player going there for the right reasons, knowing he's going to play football.
But if you're driven by money, it's the generations. I think if you look at generations now, listen, don't get me wrong, there's still a certain amount of footballers that it's not just about the money, but there's not as much as there was 5, 6, 7, 10 years ago. So 10 years from now, there's going to be even less. So therefore, you're going to get players going to a football club and saying, listen, I know we're 2 weeks till the end of the season, and I know that you've been paying my wages all season. I know that I've just started scoring goals for you. And I know that, to be honest with you, if I leave the football club, you're going to get relegated. But you know what? See you later, Ramovsky.
Danny, Jermaine Defoe played with a transfer request down a sack at West Ham. But he handed it in on the last day of the season after they get relegated. So this happens
but
anyway.
He wouldn't have to do that. No, yeah, but he wouldn't. He wouldn't. Yeah, but he handed. But he handed it in after they got relegated. He couldn't do anything about it then. If you do it three games before the end of the season, all of a sudden you're done.
He might have done him a favour, because you might be sitting there saying this guy doesn't want to be here anyway. I'm like, could you take a look at Sunderland? How many of those players were playing for Sunderland the last 10 games of the season, saying to themselves, I need to keep Sunderland up here because I'm going to be here next season? I would say very few. The vast majority of players now know, especially if you're a good player, and most clubs who are going to buy players, if you're a good player scoring goals for a club that's going down, you're staying in the Premier League anyway. You know that.
Most well, who got a good move? Who got a good move at Sunderland from the end of last
none
season?
None of them deserve it.
But who did?
Jordan Pickford.
And Defoe. That's Jordan. It. And they're the ones that deserve it. So you reap what you sow.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. So if you perform for your club, you're staying up anyway. But if you don't perform, you're going down with a football club. And so at that point, when you're playing for a club that's going down, you're playing for your individual future anyway. And so for me, I think, look, whether you finish the season with a club that goes down, the club that goes down will always sell its best players, and with a rare exception. Almost always, especially if you're a goal scorer. So for me, I just think it has a negative effect. And Liverpool, we just talked about, they'll be happy enough, I would imagine. Although I'm not sure, actually, Chamberlain, if there's one thing Liverpool have in abundance, it's pace out wide. And just like you, Martin, I'm not quite sure what is actually Chamberlain's best position.
He wants to be a midfielder, so he probably sees himself within that midfield three, doesn't he?
Me too.
And I did mean it with all due respect to. It wasn't a knock, and it was a genuine comment. After 6 years, you know, a player who's getting 120 grand a week, who could have got 180 grand a week at Chelsea, you should be able to turn around and go, this is what he does well. This is what, you know, he needs to improve on. This is his position, and this is where he's going to play. And I can't answer any of those questions for Oxlade-Chamberlain. I just don't. There's not been an improvement. So, you know what? This maybe is the move he needed. He needed out of Arsenal. He needs a fresh challenge. And maybe Klopp does get the best out of him. And maybe that system is better for him. I mean, with all his pace, it certainly looks like it should be.
All right, quick comment on two managers I want to ask you both about. Dan, I'll start with you first, mate. I'll let you finish up on it, Martin. Slaven Bilic and Frank de Boer, are they both in big trouble?
Oh, flipping heck. I did Crystal Palace Swansea on Saturday, and to say it was poor was another level. I've worked at Crystal Palace before in the job that I'm doing now, and I've played at Crystal Palace. And one thing that you knew when you were going to get there was a team in your face. Swansea turned up there, and they mustn't have believed their luck. They allowed Swansea to do whatever they wanted to do. Benteke at halftime was just, he was going nuts. If they have a particular type of play, what you got to do, if you're a manager, you go into a football club and you want to change them, you want them to play a certain style, that's fine, but you've got to do it slowly but surely. He had lads playing a certain way, and the lads didn't know what was expected of him. And big trouble at Crystal Palace. I honestly do believe that. Bilic, they're talking about he's got a few games. He's got a huge game coming up against Huddersfield. I'm looking forward to doing, I'm actually doing that one. It's going to be a really interesting game. I want things to work out for him. I've got a lot of time for him. I think he's a fantastic guy. Hopefully the home form is going to be better than last season. Obviously, you know, they've made a few inroads in the transfer window. Arnautovic getting himself sent off didn't help. Hernandez scoring goals will hopefully have helped. So I think Bilic, if he can navigate these next two or three games, then hopefully things will look up for him. But for Crystal Palace, things have got to change quickly, because they looked woeful. They were not playing any of their players to their strengths. It was how De Boer wanted to play. And you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me massively of his time at Inter Milan.
Yeah.
It just doesn't look like a right match at the minute, unless he's prepared to negotiate in terms of understanding that if you've got certain players that play a certain way, you've got to let them get on with it and do your way slowly but surely.
Martin?
I think Bilic's days are numbered. I really do.
Snodgrass put the boot into him, didn't he?
Big time. Well, and they play a Huddersfield. Huddersfield, they haven't conceded a goal yet.
Huddersfield are a good team.
You know, they invested well.
So
that's a big, big game for them. Obviously, like you say, Chicharito scoring the goals that we know Chicharito scores in and around the 6-yard box. I think his name, he's probably got a couple of weeks, two or three games to turn things around. I think De Boer may be given a little time just because he's new in the job. But you know, I look at that team, and like you, Danny, I see a team that does not play to their strengths. Benteke is a forward who wants the ball lumped. He wants it direct. He wants it on his head. He wants it out in front of him. And all of a sudden, they try and play a little bit of football. Benteke is up there saying, get the ball to me. Just get the ball to me. And
I think he had three crosses.
Right? He looks, I mean, God damn it, I've got him in my fantasy team. I'm killing me. He looks so frustrated. The ball's not getting to him.
Rightly so.
That's a team that, it was Big Sam, wanted to come in, pump it long, get it in there. And that's when they made their turnaround. And now they've backtracked to try and start playing football, and it doesn't work. They don't have the players for that. What was working for him, why come in and start and try and change that? It's all backfiring. So he's got to change. He's got to change because he's not going to be given enough time to change that team into a footballing team. He'll go before the style adapts.
Yeah.
All right, boys, we'll go ahead and leave it there. Thanks to all of you. Enjoy your international break. We'll be back next week, of course. We'll talk about some of the international games we've seen throughout the week. We'll talk about Danny's beloved Gibraltar, see if they can qualify for a World Cup.
I'm just having a look at the score of them.
Lukaku got a couple. France are thinning up against the Dutch.
It's 9 at the minute.
Oh, I saw it at 5 and Lukaku had 2 of them.
Yeah, they're playing Belgium. You'd have Lukaku in your pocket, Danny. You'd be 2 or 3 up if you were playing, mate. the Dutch 3-0 down, unbelievable what's going on with Dutch football right now. I've never seen it such a slump. We'll see what happens. We'll take a look at the World Cup games next week, and we'll take a look ahead at the Premier League fixtures that return the following week. So thanks to all of you folks. Thanks, Danny. Thanks, Martin. Thanks to all of you.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers, boys. See ya. Bye.